All right, let's talk about bleeding and clotting. Now, why does your body clot in the first place? To prevent you from bleeding to death. Now, are you clotting at this exact moment? Is your body clotting? Yes, it is. Even as we speak, even as you just sit here yawning and sitting on your duff, you're having thousands and thousands of small blood vessel tears, which are being clotted and repaired without you ever knowing about it, without you ever having any symptoms. If we couldn't clot those little tears, you would begin to bleed from all of them, and then you'd die, just like in the movie Outbreak. How many of you have seen the movie Outbreak? And they start bleeding from their eyes, and yeah. So let's talk about normal hemostasis. Hemostasis means blood. Stasis means stop or still, the word static. So, blood stopping, arrest of bleeding. So, first thing is platelets. What do the platelets do? They get together and they hold hands. Then we have clotting and coagulation factors. Think of them as little ropes that hold the platelets together. And then we have the blood vessels themselves. The three things will work together to stop bleeding. So the first thing we have is we don't want to clot where we shouldn't clot, because you don't want to have clots in normal blood vessels. You only want to have them where they're damaged. So the first thing we have is the normal physiology of a blood vessel. Ordinarily, the blood vessel is smooth. Say smooth. Smooth. And that smooth texture makes it hard for platelets to grab on. The other thing is there's a slight negative charge of the endothelium. Now, platelets are also negatively charged, so what does that make them want to do? They push away. Remember, opposites attract. Negatives, or similars, repel. So what it does is when a platelet gets close to the edge of the blood vessel wall, it feels that negative charge and goes, whoa, I don't like this vibe. And it goes back into the middle. So you don't get clotting in ordinary, normal blood vessels. So in order to get a clot, what we need is to have the vascular endothelium be damaged. When it's damaged, that exposes a rougher surface that the platelet can then hold on to, and that is no longer negatively charged, so it doesn't get repelled. Now, once activated, coagulation is controlled by a variety of substances. These are anticoagulant and procoagulant substances that'll either inhibit clotting or they'll promote clotting. So the basic sequence of events. We're going to start out with a little break, and what's going to happen is the blood vessel is going to constrict. Constricting the blood vessel is going to make less blood flow go to that area, meaning that you're going to have less bleeding. We can induce that artificially by the use of what drug? What drug do we know of that we can administer that will stop bleeding because it causes vasoconstriction? Well, alpha-1 is the receptor affected. What would be the drug? Not an anticholinergic. No, you're thinking the other side of the system now. Alpha-1 agonist. And what would be in the alpha-1 agonist that we would use? Think lidocaine. Epinephrine. So, lidocaine with epinephrine. You can also give cocaine. It'll do the same thing. All right. So we get vasoconstriction. The vasoconstriction itself makes less blood flow go through that artery, which means that you're going to have less bleeding going from that area. The next thing that's going to happen is the platelets are going to hold hands and plug up the gap. We call that a platelet plug. The next step is the activation of the clotting cascade, which is going to end up with little fibrin ropes being tied around the platelets to stabilize them. Activation can occur in two different ways. We call the intrinsic pathway, which means inside the blood vessel, and the extrinsic pathway, which means outside the blood vessel. So if you cut yourself, go ahead and cut yourself. I mean, pretend like you imagine that you've cut yourself. When you cut yourself, stuff that's in your tissue begins to leak into the blood at the same time that blood begins to leak out into the tissue. When the stuff from the tissue leaks into the blood, that activates the extrinsic pathway. Now, no matter which way it goes, you're always going to end up with the activation of fibrinogen to form fibrin. And fibrin is little ropes that tie around the platelets and hold them together. So all of that ends up with what we call the blood clot. Now, the moment that clot is formed, it begins to start breaking down at the same time. So there's a process called fibrinolysis, which results in destruction of the clot. All right, this is our clotting cascade. So what is the end result of the clotting cascade again? Fibrin is formed from fibrinogen. Now remember, anytime we said we had a word that ended with ogen, that means it is an inactive form of the root. So fibrinogen is the inactive form of fibrin. So that would mean that fibrinogen is what class of product? What class of chemical? Inactive forms. Zymogen. All right. Now, the clotting cascade is a series of zymogens, just like what other cascade that we talked about? The complement cascade. So they're very similar in that they float around the blood, hanging out, sipping lattes, getting tattoos, until they become activated. And then one activates the other, which activates the other, which activates the other, which activates the other, until we end up with the final activation of fibrinogen turning into fibrin. All right. So here we have, on this side, we have the intrinsic pathway. Over here we have the extrinsic pathway. So we start off with factor 12 turning to factor 12A, which in turn converts factor 11 to factor 11A, which turns factor 9 to factor 9A, which combines with factor 8 to turn factor 10 into factor 10A, which in turn turns prothrombin into thrombin. Thrombin activates fibrinogen. Whew! Wasn't that fun? You don't need to remember all those numbers. All you need to know is that each one activates the next one until we end up with factor 10 and prothrombin. There's also an alternate pathway where thrombin can activate factor 13, which in turn will also help to stabilize the clot. Oh, now these colored things here, these gray ones are affected by a drug called heparin. These yellow ones are affected by a drug called warfarin. And we'll talk about both these drugs probably tomorrow. Maybe a little bit today if we get to it. All right, so let's talk about the platelets themselves. Now, platelets don't want to... Platelets usually don't want to activate until certain things are there, but they're kind of excitable. So once one goes, what do? They all go. You know, they're very much like students. You know, when one student finds a good place to get free food, the next thing you know, they're all there. So when collagen is exposed on the subendothelium, platelets are attracted to there within about 15 to 20 seconds. They can sniff out damaged endothelium tissue really easily, and they'll appear within 15 to 10 seconds and begin to fill that gap. As they begin to stick together, they degranulate. The degranulation causes some changes in those platelets, which makes them even more sticky and more able to stick to one another. Now, things that they degranulate. Serotonin and histamine. Histamine causes inflammation. Serotonin causes some other stuff. We also have thromboxane and adenosine diphosphate. So thromboxane causes vasoconstriction and promotes degranulation. Adenosine diphosphate, better known as ADP, stimulates platelet aggregation, causes them to become sticky and ruffly, and promotes nearby platelets to granulate. Now, why do they become ruffly and sticky? Because they can stick together better. So let's use my expert drawing skills to illustrate that for a moment. I really need to get a new eraser or something here. All right, what's going to stick together better? These two guys, or these two, the bottom two, because there's more area for them to stick to, and because they kind of fit into one another, they're going to stick together better. So what platelets do is they start out kind of round and just like a blob, so they don't stick to each other that well. But when they get all excited, they change shape so they can stick together better. Now, where do thromboxanes come from? You've answered this one successfully in the past, Stephanie. Think you can do it again? Okay, go ahead and guess. No. Think leukotrienes. And prostaglandins, too. I don't know what you're saying, because anorexic acid? Arachidonic acid. That's what I was thinking of. So it comes from arachidonic acid. And what else comes from arachidonic acid? Prostaglandins and leukotrienes. All right. So also promotes inflammation. So the bottom line is, when a platelet begins to stick together, it degranulates, which in turn tells other platelets to degranulate and come stick together. Hey, join the party. It's a lot of fun here. So they can stick to what von Willebrand's factor, which is a protein underneath the endothelium. And they also begin to stick because of the ADP from other platelets. Oh, you already talked about that. Okay. Now, once the platelets have stuck together and the clot has been formed, then what they do is they begin to flex their muscles. Flex your muscles. Now, have you ever seen a movie where you've got a guy hanging off a cliff with one hand, and then he's holding on to someone for dear life with the other? You ever see that? And then, it's Rocky, right? He throws the person up and saves their lives. You ever see that? Yeah. It could happen. All right, well, that's basically what these platelets are going to do. They're going to pull together, and they're going to try and pull the two edges of that damaged blood vessel together so that it can be healed. That's called clot retraction. And there's contractile elements of the platelets. Then, once it's been contracted, it's going to dissolve. And what's in charge of that is plasmin. So the inactive form of plasmin is called, interestingly enough, plasminogen. All right, now, platelets by themselves can do a decent job of stopping clotting, but, you know, what's more secure? Holding on to a cliff or tying yourself to it? Tying yourself to it. So what they would really like is they would like some help in the form of rope. And the rope that we're going to help them with is called fibrin. And what activates fibrin is fibrinogen. All right, so let's see. We have a series of enzymatic reactions among the clotting factors. Zymogens activate one another, until you get to the last one. Now, that results in fibrin, which is going to give us a meshwork, kind of like a net, that's going to stabilize the platelet plug, and it'll bind to this receptor right here, GP2B3A receptor. Now, the reason you need to know that is because platelets have evolved. When I went to school for nursing school, platelets did not have that receptor yet, so I didn't have to memorize it. But when I went back to school a year later, magically, these platelets had evolved new receptors, and not only that, we had drugs that could actually take advantage of those receptors. So now, then I had to memorize it, and so now guess what? You get to memorize it too. All right. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. Coagulation monitoring. How do we monitor how well someone clots? What do you think we would do? Take a sample of blood and look how long it takes to clot. Sometimes call them bleeding times. So there's two different ways that we can watch blood clot. We can watch blood clot through the intrinsic pathway or through the extrinsic pathway. The intrinsic pathway is called PTT. Say PTT. 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 Intrinsic. Intrinsic PTT. Intrinsic PTT. Now, what was the drug that we said inhibited the intrinsic system? Ooh. Say it again. Heparin. So heparin goes along with PTT. Heparin, PTT. Heparin, PTT. You say it. Heparin. 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 All right, so heparin is going to inhibit PTT. What's that going to do to our PTT time? Is it going to make it higher or lower? If it inhibits bleeding, is it going to take longer to clot or shorter to clot? Longer. So what's our number going to go? Up. So if we give a person heparin to slow down clotting, the number will go up. Now, the other way we can do it is extrinsically, and that's called PT. Now, the thing about PT is nobody likes PT. So rather than use PT as a raw number in terms of seconds, we're going to divide it by the normal to come up with a ratio. Now, if you divide a number by itself, what number does one get? 1. So if normal is 12 and we take Fernanda's blood and we watch it clot and it takes 12 seconds, so we're going to divide 12 by 12, what number are we going to get? 1. So our normal ratio is 1. Now, let's imagine for a moment that we start giving Fernanda some warfarin. And now we take her blood, we watch it clot, and it takes 24 seconds. We divide 24 by the normal, which would be 12, and we would come up with 2. So now it takes how much time? Twice as long to clot. So the INR ratio is the number of times greater than or less than it takes to clot. So an INR of 2 clots in twice the time as normal. An INR of 3 clots in 3 times normal. An INR of 5 clots in 5 times normal. A clot of 0.8 clots in, clots faster than normal, 8/10 of the time of normal. So the extrinsic pathway we're going to measure in INR. INR. Now, if we give Fernanda that warfarin, do we want her INR to go up or down? We want it to go up. So when we measure INR on a patient who's on a clotting medication, we want it to go up. When we give heparin to a patient to make them not clot as much, we want the PTT to go up.